8:12 now, hot, humid, chance for afternoon showers, which means it's going to be hard unless you tour your property every day to make sure you don't have any standing water. Standing water leads to mosquitoes, which makes it tougher to abate mosquitoes. And then, of course, there's a risk for West Nile. Kevin Calloway joins us now, I think, Executive Director of St. Tammany Parish Mosquito Abatement. Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Morning, Tommy. Sounds like you've got a good recipe there for mosquitoes.
Yeah, I'm telling you, but and it does go to prevention, does it not, Kevin? Because, you know, I look around here and I got so much stuff hanging around. Not that it's the Sanford and Son or anything, but there are planters and this and that and the other thing. And after a daily rainstorm, you're pretty busy to try to empty all of that out, aren't you? Especially, I can imagine, in a rural area like St. Tammany.
Yeah, exactly. These storms that'll just sit on top of us and we'll dump an inch or two of rain pretty quickly. Sometimes you'll be at work, won't even know that it rained at home because by the time you get home, it's dry on the pavement. But, yeah, we really want people to go out and inspect their yards, find the areas that are holding water, dump those ice chests and the tarp over the wood pile, whatever might be holding water, can be producing mosquitoes. But the other one that people don't really look for, at least in St. Tammany, is if you have an on-site wastewater treatment system, a septic system, if your aerator isn't working on your on-site system, you're releasing untreated sewage into roadside ditches, and those ditches are producing mosquitoes because the fish that eat those mosquitoes can't survive in those ditches. So we're asking everybody to also check their aerator on your septic system. Make sure it's working because not only for mosquitoes, but obviously all the other dangerous things and human waste that gets washed down into our rivers, streams, and ultimately into Lake Pontchartrain.
I don't know anything about an aerator, but is that the kind of thing that has to be maintained occasionally or what?
So, yeah, aerators are plugged into a GFCI outlet on the outside of your house. And if that outlet gets tripped for any reason or if you hit it with the weed whacker, you might cause damage to that aerator pump. And then the pumps go bad. About every 7 years, you're probably going to need to replace that pump. There is an air filter on it as well that needs to be inspected pretty much twice a year. So there's some maintenance to that, but it's relatively low maintenance. So we're just asking people to be aware of their own septic systems, and the discharges into the ditch are a particular problem here in St. Tammany.
Tell me about West Nile. What are you seeing?
Yeah, so our field teams are always out there from February to November monitoring mosquito populations at over 130 locations. And 13 of these locations have tested positive for infected West Nile-infected mosquitoes. We test these mosquitoes in our own in-house lab, and the very next day we can go out and send our trucks and airplanes to try to bring those populations down that may be carrying those viruses down as quickly as possible. So we're seeing sort of pretty widespread risk of West Nile virus sites from north and east of Covington down into Mandeville and all the way over into Slidell. So it's pretty well spread across St. Tammany. And this is about three times elevated risk from last year that we saw at this time. And we've also been notified, as we've been reported by Louisiana Department of Health, that we have a couple of people, of St. Tammany residents, that have been infected with West Nile as well. So we're particularly concerned, and we're just trying to ask people to be mosquito aware and take those steps that you just mentioned to protect themselves and their families.
There's only so much when it comes to abatement that you can do if people don't do the things they need to do around their property, and especially what you're talking about with the aerator and the ditches, right?
That's right. And, you know, it's South Louisiana, right? We get about 70 inches of rain every year. Here in St. Tammany, with these heavy clay soils, it tends to hold the water near the surface of the ground. So we're always inundated with mosquitoes, and they're going to go from egg to adult in about a week's time. And those female mosquitoes, after they take a blood meal, they're laying about 150 to 200 eggs in a batch. So it's explosive growth in a very short amount of time. And so that's why we're constantly monitoring and ready to go try to control their populations.
Is the difference between this year and last year all about the weather?
Well, that's a good question, and that's going to be a hard question to answer. I will tell you, in 2022, we had an outbreak year after Hurricane Ida. So we know that hurricanes tend to structure when we're seeing these outbreaks. We saw it after Katrina as well. So these outbreaks tend to be episodic. Every 3 or 4 years or so, we're going to get an increased level of activity. So we're not quite sure. It's a complicated ecology between birds. West Nile virus is a bird disease and these mosquitoes. So it's really kind of hard to observe all those interactions to know what are the drivers for is 1 year going to be worse than the next.
So you treat it from the bird end or the mosquito end or both?
Well, we treat it from the mosquito end, but there are a few new sort of techniques that have yet to come to market that can treat it in the birds, one of which is feeding ivermectin. Of course, that's an interesting topic. Ivermectin-laced bird seed to birds, because when they ingest the ivermectin, it goes into their bloodstream, and ivermectin is known to kill mosquitoes after they feed on them. So there are some novel approaches that are several years away from being used, but to look at it from the bird end as well. But all of our work is really focused on the mosquito end right now, yeah.
Just to be clear, Kevin, because, you know, some words can be triggers. When you say ivermectin, you're not advising people take ivermectin so that the mosquitoes that bite them will die, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Well, you know, sometimes people hear stuff and they don't know. Somebody, by the way, I want to open the Oakland Art Jeweler talking text line here, 504-260-1870. If you live in St. Tammany Parish and you got any questions about mosquito abatement, please feel free to text them in, but I would ask that you do not text and drive ever. Somebody texted in here. We're talking with Kevin Calhoun, Executive Director of St. Tammany Parish Mosquito Abatement. The spray the parish sprays for mosquitoes, does that kill them or does it make the mosquitoes sterile? And I guess they're thinking about the screwworm thing.
That's right. So the treatments we use kills mosquitoes. The sterile insect technique that you've heard with screwworms is something that is being tried for mosquitoes as well, but it's an incredibly expensive process. We would have to grow them here and then release these sterile males that would go and sterilize the females out there and bring the populations down. So that technique is effective, but it's expensive and it has to be continued over and over and over again. And it hasn't really been developed for the mosquitoes that we primarily combat here in St. Tammany Parish.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up here. We come back. Having an interesting conversation with Kevin Calhoun, Executive Director of St. Tammany Parish Mosquito Abatement. Somebody texted in and said they've seen signs on people's property that say not to spray. And I don't know if they can do that or not, or how does the parish regulate all of that? Because if it's a public street, I would think you can spray. But what does that have to do with keeping mosquito populations down? Somebody else wants to know if people or animals have to worry about the spraying that you do with mosquito abatements. So you can answer all of that when we come back right now. 820 traffic, WWL. 824 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Kevin Calhoun, who is the executive director of St. Tammany Parish Mosquito Abatement. I always like to ask this, Kevin, because everybody's got a story. When you were growing up, did you want to be the head of mosquito abatement for a parish? How does one wind up going into that career path?
Oh, Tommy, I think we've actually talked about this before. When I was, in high school, I became obsessed with the Hot Zone book by Richard Preston. Mm-hmm. Which is all about sleuthing viruses in Africa and understanding the origins of Ebola. And mm-hmm. So I just became obsessed with that because it's the application of a true mystery. What's causing the problem? And then a way to help your community, and way to protect public health. So that's really why I got in all this.
That's when you were in high school?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I spent most of my time watching Looney Tunes, which probably explains why I'm where I am. What about the...
Too.
Yeah, what about people are texting in about signs on people's property that say not to spray, that it hurts the common good? I don't know. I've not been to St. Tammany Parish lately. Is that a thing?
Sure. So the common good, that's a good question. We recognize that we're not going to be able to satisfy everyone's concern. And so that's why we use the best science available to sort of balance the needs and concerns of our residents. With the insecticides that we use, and also trying to balance that need with the need to protect public health and public safety. And so that's why we use a process that's called an integrated mosquito management process. And by that, we first are trying to reduce the sources of where mosquitoes are coming from. We talked about that a little bit earlier, the septic systems and those containers. Then it's surveillance. We're monitoring mosquitoes, and we're using that data to determine where and when we're going to apply those insecticides. We're not just applying them on a schedule, sort of willy-nilly. And then we're trying to manage those populations in the larval stage first so they don't become biting adults. And when that fails, we do need to take measures to protect public health to spray other insecticides. So it's an open process. We have an open public meeting to discuss how we do what we do, and we encourage the public to come speak their mind about their concerns with that approach.
Do you guys do it? You know, I live in Beltrace, which is a pretty like a bedroom community, however you want to describe it. But I know there's a lot of land in St. Tammany Parish, and do you guys do it with trucks on the streets? Do you do it with the ditches, or do you have air spray? How do you do this?
Yeah, another good question, and that hits to that integrated approach, right? So the first approach is treating those roadside ditches with all that sewage-polluted water. And so we have a team of individuals that drive these right-side drive Jeeps, and they're treating those ditches with an insecticide that's actually a bacteria, not a chemical, designed to kill larval mosquitoes only. And so if we can kill them there, that's the first approach. But then, of course, we have trucks that go down the streets to kill adult mosquitoes, and we have aircraft. We have a helicopter that also larvicides, and it treats for those adult mosquitoes, and we have an airplane as well. So it's all methods possible so that we bring the threat down as soon as possible, and we manage it so it never gets out of hand.
So one thing that always I wondered about, and just when I used to jog, is that, and I'd get caught out on the street with a mosquito truck, is, well, either a little bit of this goes a long way, or I shouldn't be right behind a mosquito truck, or it's going to kill me too. Or it doesn't take much of this. It's in such low concentration that it kills something small like mosquitoes. Tell me about the safety of this when it comes to people, pets, et cetera.
Absolutely. So the products that we use are considered ultra-low volume products. Essentially, it's a half of a shot glass, a half an ounce per acre of area that we're using of actual insecticide.
Wow.
So if you think about half of a shot glass across the Saints playing field in the Superdome, that sort of acre area, that's how much insecticide is out there. Now, the products that we use are all registered by the EPA. And what that means is that there's a scientific review process to, number one, make sure that those products are going to be safe for humans, for animals, number one. Number two, are those products effective as well? So those protocols have been developed by the EPA to ensure the health and safety and the efficaciousness of these products that we're using.
Big question here. Does it kill honeybees?
Yeah, good question. I mentioned ultra-low volume. The size of those insecticide droplets is tightly calibrated to be about half the width of a human hair, and that's about 15 to 30 microns in diameter. So those tiny little droplets are designed to kill really only small-bodied insects, smaller than a honeybee. We don't doubt that these insecticides might kill bee populations, but generally when we're applying them at night. These bees are foraging during the day, so they're back in their hives. They're pretty well protected from these insecticides.
So again, check the aerator on the septic tank, and also make sure you dump over any containers every day. You got to go through it if it rains, and make sure there's no standing water, and help yourself. Accurate, Kevin?
Yes. One more element. Please wear your repellents. Be mosquito aware. If you're getting bitten, go inside. Wear your EPA-registered repellents as well. Protect yourself.
Applied from the exterior, not interior, just to be clear. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it. Kevin Calluette, Executive Director of the St. Tammany Parish Mosquito Abatement. We'll talk with Jeff Palermo about LSU recruiting when we come back right now, 8:30, time for WWL First News. 46:14 before 9, I was mentioned watching NFL Films Classics on YouTube yesterday while I was pumping aluminum. We're all jonesing for some football, right? But if you want to just see what the game was like back in the day, especially look at the old Saints highlight films from 1971, Archie playing quarterback. It's pretty fun to watch, man. LSU kicks off the season against Clemson there in South Carolina on August 30th. It'll be here before you know it. Today's July 11th. And Jeff Palermo joins us now, our friend, WWLSU columnist and WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director, talk about Tigers and recruiting. How you doing, Jeff?
Oh, I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm jonesing for football. You?
Yeah, I could have, last night being a Thursday night, I could have even gone for like a Browns-Titans Thursday night NFL game on in the background, right?
Bro, I'm telling you. Bruh, go to YouTube and look up NFL Films Classics. And they even have the, it's like a screenshot because you can see, I mentioned the scroll underneath the show as it's airing is like of Dal Hattie and the Oakland A's during the Moneyball run. And then they got a Saints Rams score from years and years ago. And it's an interesting time capsule, especially to see what the game looked like then and what it looks like today. So it'll kill some time if you're looking to do that.
All right. Might do that this weekend.
Tell me about LSU football and commitments and signees and recruiting and everything else.
Well, yesterday was a big day for the LSU football program as, according to ESPN, the top high school football recruit in the class of 2026, Lamar Brown, who plays at University High, and for those that do not know, University High is located on the LSU campus, but it's not always a guarantee that a great player from University High will end up at LSU. There's been examples of guys that have wanted to, you know, play somewhere else, which is understandable in the sense that, hey, I've spent six, five, whatever, how many years it is in grade school through middle school and high school, I'll go into U High and I want to see what else is out there. What else does the world have to offer? So some kids do decide to go somewhere else. And we also understand how recruiting means, it's so much about money and all that kind of stuff. But LSU was able to get it done. Lamar Brown, this kid's a five-star prospect. If he decides to play as an offensive lineman, the belief is he'll be an outstanding offensive lineman. If he decides to, and his heart is being a defensive lineman, he wants to play on the D-line in college football. So if he decides to do that, well then, he's expected to be one of the top players in college football. So it was a big commitment for LSU to get. They really had to fend off Texas A&M, who was very aggressive in trying to get him to come to College Station, much like they were successful in getting Christian Harris, who was an outstanding player at University High. And, well, Christian Harris originally was committed to Texas A&M, but then ended up at Alabama. But you know, they've had at least a little bit of success in getting commitments from U High players at Texas A&M. So this was an opportunity for the Aggies, but LSU was able to get the commitment, and then they followed that up by getting a three-star edge rusher from Orlando, Florida, DeAnthony Lafayette, to commit to LSU. So, and DeAnthony Lafayette chose LSU over Oklahoma and Miami. So LSU, which was, you know, outside the top 10 in a lot of the recruiting rankings, has really made up some ground here since the 4th of July holiday.
I'm going to throw this out to the audience, 504-260-1870. You're a top recruit. Would you want to go, and you're going to U High, would you want to go to LSU where you know everything, you're familiar with the surroundings and everything else, or would you want to see something different? I can make a case either way, and what would you want your kid to do? When we come back, Jeff, I want to talk about the force that any of this has, how much you can count on any of this. Also, how do they decide who's getting paid what? Or is it a contract thing yet with name, image, well, not name, image, and likeness, but the money now that LSU has to spend? I don't know if they've even determined who gets paid what, how, but we'll talk about all that and how committing these commitments really are. 851 9-10-9 traffic now, WWL. WWL back with Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Texter about 50-50 on if you go to U High, would you want to go to LSU or would you want to go somewhere else? I can make a case either way, what you know and what you're familiar with as opposed to experiencing something new. I think if I had to pick, though, Jeff, I would say it's going to be enough of a transition to college football without everything else changing. So I would say go to LSU where everything else remains constant, and then you adjust to the game. Thoughts?
Yeah, most of the kids that you know, your high prospects, your big time prospects, do end up going to from University High to LSU. You know, Nick Brossett was an outstanding running back, and at one time held the record for most rushing yards and touchdowns by a running back in Louisiana high school football history. And he ended up going to LSU, and after he had graduated LSU, he had a job within the LSU football department as well. So it does work out for a lot of guys by just staying where they're at. So, you know, it's a tough decision, but man, it's, you know, Tommy, we know recruiting has just changed so much. It's now really the dollar and how much these guys are expecting to receive, whether it's through revenue sharing, which is now underway in college athletics, or through NIL deals. And that's really becoming the main decision, whether then more so than, you know, obviously back in the past, it was, well, is this a place that I think I could play right away? Do I really like the coaches? Do I feel at home there? Sometimes, you know, money is outweighing a lot of those other previous factors that went into where a kid decided to go to school.
So how binding are these commitments? Because if you got money involved, I would think it'd be a contractual situation, or can you do that? Does LSU know how they're going to spend their $20 million yet? Who decides who gets what? That's a lot to talk about, Jeff, so I'm going to turn it over to you with 2 minutes left.
Well, Austin Thomas is the man, the salary cap guy, if you would, over at LSU. You know, this is his third stint with LSU. He's considered one of the brightest minds in the college football world. He's been at other schools as well, including Ole Miss and USC. So that's mainly his job. And if you've seen, LSU has been hiring a lot of other guys in the recruiting department, and it's becoming more and more of a team effort. It's not just the coaches so much. It's now really becoming like a front office with scouts, very much like what you would see with the Saints. College football is moving in that direction where you're building up these front offices. So that's a big part of it. What were the other couple questions?
The binding nature of whoever these announcements.
You have the early signing period in December. Most of these kids that commit do stick with their commitment. You do have a few that sway, but now most of the time these guys commit, and especially the summertime going into their senior season is becoming a very popular time for these kids to decide where they're going, and then they, you know, 9 out of 10, 9.5 times out of 10, they do stick to it.
30 seconds left. At what point does it become a contractually binding thing where there's, you know, quid pro quo?
Well, I mean, I think we're kind of moving into that direction. There's no doubt about it. I think there's a certain understanding that when a, you know, especially a big-time prospect like Lamar Brown, when he commits to LSU, he's expecting not only playing time but other things as well.
And I'm just wondering from the university standpoint, well, if, you know, if you can expect that, we can expect this. It's a mess. Thank you, Jeff. Have a good weekend.
All right, Tommy.
We'll talk to Ian McNulty when we come back.